Life Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio now. I'm Mitch Tyke. The NPR quiz show, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, made its name through its irreverent take on the week's news. NPR's latest quiz show, Ask Me Another, is perhaps a few degrees less reverent. It features puzzles, guests, the music of Jonathan Coulton, and the wit of host Ophira Eisenberg. Eisenberg is a stand-up comedian, native of Calgary, Alberta, and as her memoir describes in great detail, formerly a devoted practitioner of promiscuity. It is probably not necessary to point out that her memoir called Screw Everyone, Sleeping My Way to Monogamy is for a somewhat mature audience, though it might not get an NC-17 rating. Ophira Eisenberg joins us from NPR in New York. Great to talk to you.
Thank you so much, Mitch.
So when, or maybe the better question is, why did you decide your romantic history was a book?
As they say, sometimes the project comes to you. I'm going to say that. I was actually performing a lot of these stories on stage as part of The Moth, which is a storytelling organization where people tell true stories from their life on stage. And I would tell, you know, 5-minute versions or whatever. And I also do stand up. Sometimes I would tell some of these stories within my stand up if it fit. And I got a really good reaction from people. And sometimes I got surprising reaction from men that they were like, oh, I've never really heard this kind of perspective because I guess in my stories I'm self-deprecating, but I'm also not powerless or crying or wondering, like, why don't these guys like me? And I've met an agent, actually, through doing some of these shows who helped me figure out that it was worth putting out there and putting together a proposal. But I didn't even realize till I published it that it was a brave thing to do. Someone was like, wow, that's pretty wild you put that stuff out there. I was like, really? Oh, no.
Well, right. I mean,
I should have thought of that.
Well, and I wonder if it strikes you as odd that the people who read this book and speak with you about it, i.e. a radio interviewer,
yes,
have this uncommon insight into your sex life, whereas you have no insight into most of theirs.
Well, I can gather a lot just from talking to you, Mitch. No, that is true. I realize there's a lot of people floating around that know way more about me than is even some of my best friends, unless they read the book. But I don't know. I feel like everything that is in there, I don't mind people knowing. I'm not. I don't feel bad about it. I think it's kind of great if they relate to it, or at least they get a laugh. I feel like as long as they're entertained, my job is done.
Well, you write this less like a person in recovery. I mean, obviously the subtitle is Sleeping My Way to Monogamy. So there's obviously a change that happens. But you don't write this like a person in recovery. You write it like a chronicler.
Yes. Yes. And I mean, that was the advantage of writing it from where I am now is that I had perspective on the stories that were when I was sort of dating and bumbling around and trying to figure myself out. And the fact that now I am actually happily married, and I have to say actually because it always blows people's minds, that I had enough perspective to look at these stories from a different lens. I think when I was going through them or even when I was a little closer to them, I just thought of them a little differently. So I was able to have a voice of a more chronicler just vis-a-vis the perspective I have now.
Was there anything in the process of doing this that was like reconciling that period of your life to yourself?
Oh, my goodness, yes. You sit there and start. There were portions of writing these stories where I would cringe just remembering. All of a sudden you would go, okay, let's write out this story. And you remember like being in some bar at someone's house or waiting near the phone. And I was embarrassed by what I would remember myself thinking or how desperate I was. Some of it was really very hard to write. And others, you know, a lot of the other stuff I thought, wow, you know, I didn't understand the process at the time, but it was nice even for me to go, oh, wow, I actually learned from that experience because that next time when it came up, I did not repeat the same mistake. Some of it felt like therapy at the time, and then I had to sort of take a step back because I wasn't going to write anything that sounded like therapy. I wanted to be sure that it was funny, entertaining, and fit for, you know, someone to read rather than something that was just like, wow, this girl seems a little unhinged.
Well, and really, when was the next time you were going to go home with a fellow comedian and find his bedroom stocked with Garfields?
Right. How many times can that happen? You know what? I have to be careful about saying things like that, because usually when you go, what are the odds of that? You find out the odds are one in one. So, yeah, but that was a particularly interesting. And, you know, I set up that story, too, where something much more dangerous could have been the payoff. But if the payoff is that you know, you're going to a stranger's house and strange things could happen, and they put you in a scenario where what is behind that door, and then you find out it's 300 Garfield, still chilling, but in the realm of the world, adorable.
And it really was maybe the best invocation of the word Odie in print, I think, in history.
Thank you.
Well, so obviously you have to have some belief that this is a life slightly out of the ordinary, or it wouldn't make a memoir. But does the putting it down on paper, do you reflect on how different it was from place to place? I mean, this is it seems like way out of line for Calgary, but somewhat less out of line for New York.
The experiences? Yeah. I think when I was writing it and when I even conceived it, I always came from that perspective that I thought I was doing the same thing as everybody else. I really thought that. Like, even in Calgary, I knew I wanted to do things that were different than everybody. I always was that girl that I was like, everyone's wearing pink sweaters, I'm going to wear a green sweater. Like, that was definitely my mentality. But in terms of my actions, I didn't really think I was that out of control or really picking anything that was that different. As it turns out, not everyone just opens any door that says, do not enter. I thought everyone kind of did that. I'm like, but aren't you curious what's on the other side? And I find a lot of people are like, no, I just follow the sign. I was like, oh, it's an interesting way to approach life. But New York, so Calgary is much more heterogeneous than maybe I wrote about it, because I wrote it from my perspective. But New York, of course, is incredibly diverse in every sense of the word, and it's pretty hard to stick out here.
Do you feel like are you a different person than as a married monogamous writer than you were as a non-married, non-monogamous, non-writer?
To a certain point, yes. And I always say, you would be a fool to not let life change you. So if I ended up being the same person I am now, that would be a real problem. That would be zero. I don't believe in social evolution so much, but I certainly believe in life being a little bit of a project where things get better as you go on, and you should grow and be affected by your experiences. And I would never want to go back to those days. I kind of see it like high school, or just being a young adult, or just being in an education process where, I graduated and people are like, don't you miss going around and having experiences, adventures, dating? And there are some thrills I miss, but there's so many other things about it that I'm so happy I never, hopefully, have to go through again.
The tassel has been moved to the other side of the mortarboard.
Exactly.
Which I never thought of as a euphemism.
That's brilliant. That is brilliant.
So this is obviously not a mystery book, so I'm not going to say spoiler alert, even though I just did.
That's right. But the title spoils it.
Right. There's a point late in this book in which you come across your then-boyfriend's list of all the women he slept with, and it really disturbed you on a couple of levels. What was it that bugged you so much about that?
Okay, so there was a couple things. The list I thought was all the people he slept with, but it was actually all the people he had been with. Now, I didn't know that at the time. I thought it was who he slept with. So there was a couple things. Now, this is the pot calling the kettle black, of course. But seeing a list at all, that idea of someone chronicling it and making it somewhat clinical, I think the sort of absence of any emotion about it, just this list, and my name was at the end of it, like, thank God, the end, but still made me feel very generic and not special. He had little words besides some of them that were descriptive words on maybe what kind of kissers they were, or different things about their body type, or different, descriptions of their skill level. But right beside my name, it had the most insulting thing of all time, because it just read comedienne. The feminized, made-up version of comic for women that I think is one of the most sexist terms out there on the planet, and I was enraged. It's so funny. He had said, with perspective, a lot of worse things about a lot of other girls on that list. But I was like, how dare you? How dare. And all of a sudden, all the number of people didn't matter to me. The other girls didn't matter so much. But the fact that I was a comedian, I was like, this guy will never, ever, ever touch me again. Of course, I learned later that, you know, he didn't know.
He meant no harm.
He was like, really? That's a bad word? I had no idea. I was like, yes, that is an outdated word, like spinster. He was like, oh, I thought it was fine.
This is like the equivalent in the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the entry next to Earth reading harmless.
Right, exactly. So he didn't know. A lot of guys create this list. It's so funny because I've really found from that story being around that a lot of people have lists. I just never had them because I was either my brain doesn't work like that. I didn't remember a lot of the people, so there'd be blank spaces on the list, which feels like an incomplete. But a lot of people have these lists. They love chronicling their lives in that little point form spreadsheet.
So then the obvious question, this book, to some degree, is that list for you?
I know. It's true. But some people didn't make it in. And I have actually heard from some people. And thanks, Facebook, once again, for existing. Remember when we could lose track of people, Mitch? Oh, those were the days. But I thought it was very funny that one ex-boyfriend wrote me, and I always like, oh, God, here we go. Are they going to be freaking out? And he just wrote, really, 2 years, and all I get is two paragraphs?
Sorry, you are the relationship on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, I was like, hey, it was a good relationship. What do you want from me?
Right, there's that thing. The only thing worse than to be in it is to not be in the book, right?
Right. It's so funny that way. I'm like, you really, you've read these things. You know, I'm sorry you didn't have 300 Garfields in your room. There's nothing I can do about it, okay? I can't go back and rewrite history.
Next time, be weirder.
Yeah, exactly. More tragedy, and you'd make it in, okay?
Well, so then let me ask you this. I mean, this is, I think there is, even if you don't necessarily wish you had lived that life as you read this book, it certainly is vicariously exciting or interesting or compelling. How do you fit that life that you have led into the public radio box?
Right. Well, that's a great question, Mitch. I think, you know, someone asked me something very similar, and I think I'm going to use the same response, which they basically said, how does public radio /NPR feel about the fact that one of their employees wrote a book about sleeping around? And I thought about that very long and hard, and I did a little canvassing for popular opinion here at the Bureau, and it turns out a lot of people in public radio have had sex. I know that's not a very common it's a bit of a misconception. I think foreplay is a lot like a membership drive. I'm not really sure.
Misconception is a good word, then.
But it turns out that they are fine with it. But yes, it does make me perhaps one of the racier people at NPR only because I have a book. I'm sure if you really started throwing around some bullet bourbon or whatever these fine people drink around here, you would get some extraordinary stories.
Though in some ways, at least as the host of a comedy show on NPR, it's not as much of a stretch to imagine you writing this as, say, having Carl Castle write it.
Although, you know what? We should sit down with Carl Castle and talk about the early days and see what comes out of him, because I bet he's got some, you know, got some good stories about the panels, people wanting to be on the panel. How they got there. But you're right. I am the jester. More or less, in the public radio world. So they think they give me a little bit of leeway.
It would be interesting to look under the cushions of the NPR casting couch, though.
Yeah, exactly. See what you find. An antenna. Strange.
Well, Ophira Eisenberg, it's been a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Mitch.
Ophira Eisenberg is host of NPR's Ask Me Another, which airs Saturdays at noon on this very station. Her memoir is called Screw Everyone, Sleeping My Way to Monogamy, published by Seal Press. It is also worth pointing out that we air Saturdays and Sundays as well, 3 p.m. here on 89.7 FM. We are produced by Dan Harmon, Bonnie North, and Stephanie Lecce, with support from producer Amy Kiley, engineer John Strelecki, and our team of interns. Eleanor Peterson, Rachel Bloom, Gabby Magallanes, and Nathan Royster. I'm Mitch Tighe. Have a great and hopefully warmer weekend, and I do hope you can be with us again tomorrow and Sunday afternoon at 3 for Lake Effect Weekend from WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh Air is next. It's 11 o'clock.